on this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Balders, thank you for joining us today. We have a special treat for you. We have actually a surreal experience with world-class multiple author, motivational speaker, and just a super all-around person, author Kim Sorrell, talking about overcomers, the psychology of...
Surviving and thriving.
It's the psychology of surviving and thriving. Thank you, team.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
And as promised, the psychology of surviving and thriving, how to be an overcomer. And Kim is in the art lab today. We are streaming her digits. Literally, we've turned Kim into a series of zeros and ones. For those of you computer nerds that know how that works, she is here electronically in our studio. And get this, I love puns, get ready for a surreal experience. There's Kim's new slogan. She can just send us a nickel every time she uses that. That way we don't got to get the attorneys involved. No, I'm just joking. But Kim is the director of a humanitarian organization. She's a popular speaker. She is a two-time author, and I'm sure to be a many-time author, of Cry Until You Laugh. It's about her husband's tragic battle with cancer after being diagnosed for just 4 months. Her second book, and I love this also, Love Is. And who doesn't need more information about what love is? As a clinician, I find people that have no idea what love is. I look forward to talking about that today. And we're going to have a enlightening, maybe humorous conversation today in the art lab. And so, Kim, we're going to turn it over to you and share with us some things about, you know, how you got to where you are in life, because it sounds like it wasn't an easy journey.
Is anybody's journey easy? I don't know how that works.
We haven't found one yet, no. Huh?
Right. Yeah, well, gosh, where to start? I started my first business right out of high school, and I've been in business my whole life and been in the nonprofit world as well. And I was happily married. I met a man, fell madly in love. 10 days later, I asked him to marry me, and he said yes. And less than a year later, we got married. And a few years later, the baby started coming, and you know how life just kind of happens. And then a few years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And nobody ever wants that diagnosis. Nobody ever wants to hear that word. And then the more horrible thing that happened, though, was 4 months later, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and died 6 weeks after that.
So
I had to reinvent my life. You know, you've got this vision for the future. We were going to be these 95-year-old couple sitting on a porch in rockers drinking lemonade, right? I mean, that was the plan, and looking at each other or whatever it is that 95-year-olds do while rocking on a porch. And so it was starting anew.
Wow. You know, I'll be very interested to hear, as I'm sure our listeners will too, but, you know, I found in situations like that, a lot of people have the freeze response. Okay, we talk about fight, flight, freeze. And some talk about fawn, but I think that's another term of avoidance, actually. We may be splitting hairs on that one. But that would be a freeze response that most people have, because they throw up their hands and they think, I'm just going to sit down and do nothing. I'm just done. I'm just going to quit. And in psychology, we also call that behavioral deactivation. How did you avoid that? Or did you do that, and then you got a hold of it and changed how you functioned?
Well, I have kids. And even though they were adults when it happened, I still am a mom. And they were all very close with their dad. And so there were two things going on. One, I was still going through all my medical stuff at the time. But I also felt like I needed to be this strong mother for my kids' sake. And so it was a bit of a challenge for sure, but A little bit of it maybe was paddling up the river of denial, wishing that it wasn't actually true. Like it took a little bit to sink in, and it happened so quickly. They had told us that he'd probably live a year. So 6 weeks was really, really, really fast. But I just felt like I had to be strong, and I had to get through my stuff. I had to get through all of the medical crap that I had to go through. And then I'll tell you, the big thing that changed things for me is when I was ready to go back to work, which it was the end of the year that my husband died, I was finally ready to go back to work. And I wasn't sure if I was going to go back into the nonprofit world, go back into my businesses, what I was going to do. And I happened to run into a man who was running the organization that I now run, that my father and I had started 10 years previously. And I ran into him between Christmas and New Year's. And I said, "Hey, can I help you with anything? You know, what's going on?" And I said, "What about bookkeeping?" And he said, "Oh my gosh, if you could do the books." I said, "Sure." And so I started January 1, fresh books, part-time bookkeeper. And 12 days later, there was an earthquake in Haiti that killed 200,000 people.
Oh my word.
Yeah. So in 2 weeks, within 2 weeks, I was in Haiti. And then I spent some of every month in Haiti for the next several years. And I really think, I know that for me, maybe for others, that there is healing in service.
Absolutely.
There is healing in that, right?
You know, I think so many people forget that talking about the fight, flight, or freeze response is because when we're in a fight, flight, or freeze response, our initial impulse, I mean, just instinct, is self-care, self-care, self-care. And thank you so much for pointing that out, because one of the most healing things you can do psychologically is to short circuit that by reaching out and trying to serve somebody else. Those of you listening, when you're going through trauma, tragedy, sure, self-care, that's great. Eat right, sleep right, do take care of yourself, but find a way to serve others, find a way to reach out. I don't think I've had a guest so far that has allowed us the opportunity to talk about that particular thing. Just the whole value and service. What are some of the other upsides you found to giving of yourself, even in the midst of tragedy?
I think when you give of yourself, you realize that there are people that need more help than you do. And with my marriage, I had a great marriage. And what I found is that people that I know that have gone through similar circumstances have lost their husband. I was 47 years old. You know, way younger than you expect it to happen. And the people that I know that have gotten through better are people that had a great relationship, a happy marriage. People that I know that struggled in their relationship seem to be the wallowers, seem to be the ones with lots of regrets and wishing they'd done something different, and just having a hard time coping with the fact that their person's not here anymore and wish they could take it back, but you can't take it back. Yeah. So do it now.
Yeah. Well, I call that an inflammation, an inflammatory disorder. That's an inflammation of the woulda, coulda, shouldas. Mm-hmm. An inflammation of woulda done this, shoulda done that, shoulda, you know, wish I would've done this other thing. And you're right. There's only moving forward or ruminating. And just a little bit of neuroscience there is the human brain is actually engineered to be very pattern sensitive and very pattern dependent. And those of you listening can't see this, but I'm holding up my right hand like a claw, and I'm pointing at my thumb, my index finger, middle finger, fourth finger, pinky finger. And if you imagine these as neurons or brain cells, that actually forms a neuronal network. That is a pattern. That pattern may be 2 + 2 = 4, 2 + 2 = 4 is where Kim was in her marriage with her husband, and that's normal, accurate, realistic, healthy. But then here comes life and says, "Oh, no, 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 no. 2 + 2 = 37. And her brain has to shift. It is a pattern shift from one reality to the next, And some people, as Kim pointed out, will wallow. Of course, we call that, again, freezing. And what Kim did was called behavioral activation. I have a YouTube video about that. I don't think it's up yet. We'll put that up. That says three of the most important words when it comes to tragedy, trauma, as well as depression. And those three most important words are move, move, move. The ingredients to healing, move, move, move. And you can also interpret that as service. And so, Kim, you got busy. And you're still busy.
Yeah. I did get busy, and I am still busy. Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, it was an interesting thing working in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Haiti is a tough place to work. I've worked in a lot of places with my nonprofit, and Haiti is the toughest, by far the toughest. It's people live on less than $2 a day. The world, especially the United States, has done a great job of taking advantage of Haiti. People get rich on the backs of the poor, and it's tragic to see.
Wow.
And so many things can be two steps forward, three steps back.
You know, speaking of steps, my dad used to say, I once complained I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet. And you're right. I mean, they're always is somebody, you know, worse off than we are. I have lots of patients coming in talking about trauma and tragedy, and it's not debatable. What they've been through is a trauma, also a tragedy. But we talk a lot about Viktor Frankl, who went to a concentration camp, and his mom, his dad, his wife, I think his sibling, was that a sister or a brother? I think it was a sister, right? Was murdered by the Nazis. And the interesting thing I find about Frankl is the absence of behavioral deactivation. He never stopped, and until his dying day, he never stopped. And I think what he stumbled upon back then in the 40s, goodness, 60 years ago, is something you stumbled upon. I'd like to hear your thoughts about. Is it sounds like you purposely began to identify value and meaning in moving forward. Value and meaning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are things that you have choices about in life, and there are things that you have no control over. Like, we don't control other people, right? For instance. Mm-hmm. But we don't control cancer. We wish that we could, but pancreatic cancer, man, it is a tough one, and there's just not a cure at this point. So there's no control over that, but I can control my level of happiness. I can control what I do, that I live a purpose-filled life, that I want to help, and I want to do things, and I want to be happy. I want positivity and happiness. And I get to pick that. Everyone gets to pick that. And sometimes people just don't, but I do.
You know, but what I run into is a lot of people that think it's not even possible. You know, we talk a lot about external locus of control. And the way I find a lot of people look at it is, oh, sure, you know, Kim, that'd be great. But, you know, I'm not you, and I'm not Doc Heath. And y'all get to pick that, and I don't get to pick that. And it's really very much a victim mentality. How do you recommend people escape that?
Well, I think people first need to recognize that you do have a choice. There should never be a thought that you don't have a choice, because you do. I mean, if two people were in the same car jam, you know, same traffic jam, one person all upset and angry going, oh my word, I cannot believe this. I got places to go, people to see. This is terrible. This is horrible. Honking, angry, whatever, blood pressure goes up. Person in the car behind says, well, it is what it is. I can't do anything about it. My car can't move any faster. I can't all of a sudden unstick the traffic. So I'm going to listen to a podcast, maybe Dr. Heath. Or I'm going to do something, right?
Hey, thank you. I didn't pay Kim a penny for that. That's all free of charge. We didn't bribe her. That was spontaneous. Thank you for that. You know, Kim, without knowing it, and I don't know, maybe you know it, but you are an existential philosopher. Everything you just said, for those of you that don't know a lot about existential philosophy, it is literally the philosophy of existence. What are you going to decide to tell yourself about your own existence at this time, in this precise moment, even if it's in a traffic jam? Is it going to be, oh, me, or amen? You know, is it going to be, so be it, or, oh, my goodness, it's overwhelming, it's going to kill me? I mean, as Kim points out, you have a choice.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. With everything and anything that happens to us, we have a choice. And our reaction is going to determine the outcome of whatever situation it is we're in. So with me, I needed to figure out the outcome and make the right choices in how I responded to things so that I'd have a great positive outcome. You know, I think it can be difficult for people to give themselves the freedom, give themselves permission to laugh again, to enjoy life, to maybe even do better in life than they did before they lost the person that they lost. But you need to do that. You need to realize that the person's gone. My husband's gone. There's nothing I can do about that. I can't get him back. And I'm not honoring him by staying in some low place and thinking about him all the time and not thinking about the good things, but thinking about my missing him, right? Mm-hmm. But I can honor him by showing that the years that we had together helped form me. Mm. All those days, all that time together helped make me the person that I am. He was a great guy. I couldn't help but get something great from him. And so to use that in a positive way, to do something with that, that is honoring him.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, this probably isn't going to come out, you know, we're going to already have Thanksgiving as we're filming this. Thanksgiving is coming up next week. So we've been focusing a lot on gratitude and having that attitude of gratitude. And I think what you said really resonates with that, because we can either think about all the things we're missing out on, all the things that we're not going to get to experience, or we can be grateful for the time that we've had. And this goes with any loss, you know, the time we've had with the person and the joys and the heartaches and all of the things that we've experienced.
You know, you meditation fans out there, you mindfulness practitioners, number one, keep it up. You're saving your own life every episode of mindfulness practice. You're literally saving your own life. But that's a whole other episode. One of the leading figures in mindfulness was also a large influence on Martin Luther King, and his name was Thich Nhat Hanh, and he was from Vietnam. He was expelled from his country because some countries, they just have a thing against peace. And if you preach too much peace, it's just not politically correct. You know, you freaking peace people, what do we need you for, you know? Well, he took up residence in France, and he began a village called Plum Village. There's actually an app called Plum Village. It's a great mindfulness app. There is no charge for that. Great resource. But Thay, T-H-A-Y-S, he was known by his friends and colleagues, knew that his time on this planet was coming to an end, and he spoke to Kim's point that she made earlier, is that his life would be carried out in those that continue what he taught, which was, of course, mindfulness. That every time people use the influence that he tried to have, they're keeping him alive. And in that way, he is in many ways eternal. And that gets into some theology that we may not get into this show, but the show today is goodness, we're just armpit to armpit with believers today. Imagine that. Oh my. But we won't get into that a whole lot. Maybe some. I think it's cool. But his view was the greatest way to honor him is to continue whatever influence he had in your life. And that's what I did with the death of my dad. I was kind of right there with Kim's mindset. I got a phone call early one Saturday morning, about 7 a.m. It was my baby brother calling me. And he said, "You know what, Heath? That barn that Dad was working on, he fell and it killed him." And I kid you not, I'm not making this up. I said, "Well, is he going to be okay?" And my brother, it was just silence. And he said, "Heath, it killed him. He's dead." I mean, my mind's processing. Why? Because neuroscientifically, a little neuroscience, I said earlier, the pattern shift is so drastic, the brain just can't keep up. And what did I have? I had all kinds of catastrophizing. I had all kinds of disgust and irritation and anger and sadness. And it was a whole, you know, a vegetable stew of emotions, which, listeners, is absolutely positively normal. I'm not recommending the next part. And that is my legal disclaimer. This is done by a professional. Do not try this at home. I went out in the back of his house and I punched a fence post until my knuckles bled. Don't do that. You can grieve other ways. Get a punching bag or something. But I did that. And then things started to change. I radically accepted my emotions and things began to change as they will for you when you accept your emotions. And at his funeral, I found myself telling funny stories about my dad and laughing. You know, I got a few white eyeballs at that. People, you know, what's he smoking? And but that's okay. That's okay because, see, in doing that, to Kim's point, I was honoring my dad. And I live every day of my life thinking, how can I live today that honors my dad? In the scriptures, one of my favorite verses that Paul says, we are surrounded by such a great a cloud of witnesses, and I won't get into the exegesis of that. It's not a theological podcast, psychological podcast, which has a lot of theology in it, though. I look at it that way, that in my mind, one member of that cloud of witnesses is my dad. And I think, by the way, he'd get a kick out of a lot of things that I do. He would think it's very, especially when I put my hand to construction work. My dad is kind of shaking his head. And by the way, one more thing I did is I never said I lost my dad because, see, you can lose your car keys, which means you don't know where your car keys are. But I know where my dad is. Therefore, I did not lose him.
It's just a little mental trick. I love that. I'm gonna go with that same philosophy right there. I love that.
You can't lose something if you know where it is. What sense does that make? Mm-hmm. And moreover, here's another little theological neuron twister is I don't believe, and no offense to anybody out there, I'm not there to tell you what to think. You're grown and legally can vote if you're over 18 and all that kind of stuff. You can think what you want. But by the way, I have a degree in theology. I love to debate folks on this point. But I don't believe that I can talk to the dead. That's its own thing. It's a different thing. I don't think particularly that's allowed, but each his own, no offense to anybody. But I do communicate with my dad because, and I'm going to get, this is personal for me. I'm not trying to offend anybody, but everybody has a right to their own beliefs. And here's mine, that Jesus can do anything. And if he can do anything, he can pass along a message to my dad. Therefore, every night since the death of my dad, in my household, the Doc Heath household, we have said a prayer, let Papa Robert know we love him and we miss him. And I think Jesus has been passing along that message now ever since. You can think about that, guys, what you like.
That's wonderful.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Randy Alcorn, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Absolutely, I am. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Love him, right? Love him. But I love in his nonfiction in his fiction, when he talks about portholes, like there's portholes in heaven, And God allows people to see the most important moments of our lives, the weddings, the whatever it happens to be. I love the idea of that.
Yes, his book, Safely Home, that's at the very end of it. At the very end of it, one of the characters in the book, and this kind of speaks to success, I believe if memory serves, and gosh, this has been, what, how many years ago? 15, 16 years ago. Just shows you, by the way, what a daily dose of, and I'm holding up my coffee mug to the camera. You can go on and watch this on YouTube, by the way, when we get it posted. My daily coffee dose of black pepper, black maca, turmeric-infused latte really does a lot of stuff to jazz up those neurons. But at the end of the book, he talks about a guy who is a street sweeper, and he had devoted his life to being the best street sweeper possible. Success is not your occupation. Success is whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. That's not my quote, that comes out of Scripture. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. My dad was a carpenter. Gosh, there's a famous person in the Bible, his dad was a carpenter. But my dad was a carpenter, and he was the best carpenter that he knew how to be. Whatever you guys are doing in your life, you can celebrate your life by doing it the very best. And those who've gone on before you, Viktor Frankl calls it caught away, those who have been caught away. You can honor their lives by using your life to continue doing the best at your job that you know how to do. What are some things that you would say to folks, Kim, that might rouse them out of their slumber of what we call avoidance or behavioral deactivation, just to kind of jazz them up and get them moving? It's often hard for folks that have been through tragedy just to climb out of bed.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I think a little time in bed is okay. Yeah. Right? I mean, you need to cry. You need to have that time. You need to cry from time to time. That's great. That's okay. You know, to recognize your emotions and deal with it, I think is great. But there's so much life to live. There's so much out there. There's so much outside your door. There's so much out into the world. And if you are someone who is just having the hardest time walking, getting out of bed, doing the next thing in life, figuring out what life is, my biggest recommendation is go volunteer somewhere. Go serve other people. Get outside of your own head. Get outside of your own space. And do something good for other people, whatever that is, whatever that looks like in your own city, your own backyard, whatever it looks like to you. But go serve other people and your perspective will change and your happiness meter will go way up.
Individual psychological concepts are very different animals from one another. And while they are often readily observable in the wild, the Therapy Bites Art Lab Zoo affords us a unique opportunity to study them in a safe and controlled environment. Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Creature Feature. Oh, good heavens!
Come here, you little booger. Come on, I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna go. Just missed him. Welcome, T-Ballers, to this episode's Creature Feature. My name is Sarah. I am your host, and hang on a minute. Do you smell that? Well, no, it's not me, I promise. It smells fishy. Almost like a gray herring. And that, my dear T-Ballers, is the creature we're going to feature today, the anger gray herring. So I'm sure most of you have probably heard the term of a red herring, which is something that distracts us from a logical conclusion. But here in the art lab, we decide to call them gray herrings because neurons, our brain cells, are gray. So whenever you notice that you're experiencing any emotion, today we're going to focus on anger though, try not to just focus on the emotion. Try to figure out where the emotion is coming from, which is, I'll give you a hint, your thoughts. So, next time, haha, this little fella, this gray herring, this little gray fish, Next time you are angry, do not let this little guy distract you from what's actually going on. Use ARTI, accurate, realistic thoughts, to determine if what you're thinking is healthy and determine if you're thinking life-affirming beliefs, okay? So, then you can just take this little fella and put him back where he came from, okay? Alrighty, so remember, practice those arties, those accurate, realistic thoughts, and I look forward to seeing you in the next Creature Feature, T-Ballers. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Thank you for joining us for the 30 Bytes Art Lab Creature Feature.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
You're slipping beneath the cushions of your bobble-headed psychotherapist's couch, leaving behind empty, echoing, cushy, comforting pseudo-psychological claptrap. Moving into a deeper dimension of your own mind, where distorted thinking, hurting, hopelessness, and regret evaporate into clarity, healing, renewed hope, and newfound resilience. That's the podcast sign up ahead. Your next stop, Therapy Bites Psych Secrets.
Hey guys, Doc Heath here. With those who are watching by video, you can see Psychotherapy Duck, and this is Psych Secrets. Trauma finds its way upward in our lives. The Greek playwright Aeschylus once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." And what does that mean psychologically? That just means that we can never completely bury trauma. Trauma must be allowed to rise to the surface bit by bit, drop by drop. We can deal with it through not avoiding, but in embracing hard things, and the key, deciding what we're going to tell ourselves about it. The psych secret of the day related to trauma is to be very clear with what you decide to tell yourself about different traumatic experiences. And the main thing you can tell yourself is, guess what? I am now no longer in danger. I am now no longer in danger. The more you remind yourself of your current safety, the more you heal from previous trauma. Isn't that right, Psychotherapy Duck? Catch you next time on Psych Secrets.
Once again, Doc Heath rips the cushions from the couch, dishes the dirt, lets the cat out of the bag, uncorks the bottle, letting the genie escape, and blows the lid off of another of the universe's Psych Secrets.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball Team.
Okay, now I can hear the wheels turning in people's heads through the podcast funnel channel right here, and I think it's kind of creaky and rusty, and I'm thinking a lot of folks are going to have trouble brainstorming. Well, yeah, that's great, but gosh, around here, what can I do? How about, guys, let's brainstorm for just a couple minutes. What are some things that folks can do? How can we put some shoe leather on this? Just nifty ideas for folks to go and give back. What are your thoughts?
There's so many.
Yeah, volunteer at a food pantry. Find something that if you go to a church or a mosque or you have some kind of organization, volunteer to help out that way with
Absolutely.
Whatever's needed.
Even if you have like a elderly individual that's in your neighborhood and, you know, we've got all these leaves falling right now, that they probably would appreciate some help if you went and, you know, did their lawn. And
yep.
Yes, I would.
Oh, are you the elderly individual?
Y'all come over. I'm just joking. It's good exercise for me. Or at least that's what my wife tells me.
Well, and something like that, it's kind of killing two birds with one stone, right? Mm-hmm. Because the other thing that can help you to be happier, to find your happiness again, is to be active, to be physically active. It makes such a difference. Your head is so much clearer and you feel so much better about yourself. Just to get out and walk even, to do whatever, but to be physical.
Yeah, and look at the leaves and look at nature. Oh, yeah. There's a song from, I guess, way before you guys were aware of songs existing, since I may be the senior in the room, I don't know. that, well, except for Debbie, you know, she, what was Noah's middle name? You were telling me Noah, his middle name was, no, I'm just joking. I'm overlooking a four-leaf clover that I've overlooked before. It's a song from the 70s. Yeah. And a lot of us, we just overlook those four-leaf clovers. I mean, it is fall. The leaves are falling. It is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Observe nature. You are a part of nature. And here's a tip that I'll give you, is it doesn't have to be all that complex. I'm stealing this from a cranky old psychologist who has also since been, as Viktor Frankl would say, called away. He made a deal with himself that he was going to invite or ask 100 women on a date, because he was just a kind of a pipsqueak, gangly, I think he's a Jewish fella, and he went to Central Park, and I think out of 100 he got one date and she didn't show up. But he did keep his commitment. Here's my suggestion. Get behaviorally activated by smiling. Don't ask these people on a date. That's just weird. I mean, unless you really need a date. Get out and count it up. Smile at 100 people. You say that's too much? Well, okay, pick 10. Put it on your calendar. Get out. Pull your left cheek to your left ear, your right cheek to your right ear, and smile at, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 people. And I guarantee you, the more you smile on the outside, the more you'll begin to smile on the inside. And you might say, well, I don't have a good smile. I have a freaky smile. Join the crowd. I have a bit of a freaky smile, I think. We're all often too hard on ourselves. But smile at people. Here's a magical phrase you could do, or you could use. You can steal this from me. What can I do to help? Mm-hmm. What can I do to help? Find people and ask them, what can I do to help? And those are just some of my my ideas. You could count your blessings, you know, count all the things you do have, re-engineer your focus away from things you don't have, refocus on things you do have. Those are three top tips from Doc Keith.
One of the things I wanted to ask about, Kim, I don't know if it ties in with the surviving and thriving, but I saw in your bio, I wanted to know what the five shocking truths are that society was never taught about love. I wanted to hear about that.
Yeah, well, you know, losing my husband made me question love, because in John says that God is love, not that God loves, but that God is love. So love is apparently something that you are, something you can be, not just an emotion like excitement or fear, but something all encompassing, right?
Right.
But what does it really mean to be love? And so I decided I would dedicate a full year to figuring out the reality of love that seems to be a little bit of a mystery. And so I took the love chapter. Love is patient. Love is kind. Does not envy. Does not boast. We hear that every wedding, our eyes glaze over, right? And take it one word a month, one word at a time, and figure out, what is love that is patient? What is love that is kind? And I figured out that you put love is or love is not in front of any word or phrase, and it completely changes it. It completely changes it. So one of the myths about love is we're told love is a two-way street, right? We hear that all the time. Love is a two-way street. It's not. Love is one way. You give love, period. You have no control over anybody else. You know, when we have babies, we have total control. We decide when we feed them. We decide when they're going to bed, when they take a bath. Then 6, 7, 8 months later, they start crawling and they're in the kitchen and all the Tupperware's all over the floor and the pots and pans are banging and everywhere. And you realize you've lost control and you never will gain control back again. We control no one but ourselves. Mm-hmm. So if I give you money and you give me a pair of jeans, that's a transaction. If I give you love to get love in return, that's a transaction. Love is not a transaction. Love is love, period. And there's freedom in it. Love sometimes is thought of as a bondage. And it's not. It is the most freeing thing you can do. When you realize it's your only job, all you have to do is love. You don't have to fix anybody. It's not our job.
Yes. Thank you.
Right? Mm-hmm. And all the unsolicited advice that we like to give sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. None of that. With love, there's none of that. There's no room for judgment. There's no room for condemnation. There's no room for racism. There's no room for fixing people. There's no room for any of that. It allows you, when you truly love the right way, it allows you to love in such a way that you are happy for the person that you love. And I believe you're supposed to love everybody. So much so that you let them live who they believe they're created to be. It's not up to you to be who they're created to be and decide for them. People decide for themselves who they believe they're created to be, and then it's up to you to live it. And so as a person who loves everybody, I just want everyone to live who you're created to be. And when you do that, it's complete freedom. There's no freedom that compares to it. It is living completely free because all you have to do is love. That's all you have to do.
It really is very freeing. I find that people put so many constraints on love. It's really hard to tell the difference, as you pointed out, between a Wall Street investment from which you expect a return on investment and whatever this thing is they're calling love. And I think that's what makes people believe that relationships are so disposable, that they've just become nothing more than something that you can buy on E-Trade, you know, invest in on E-Trade. And if you don't get back your expected ROI, you kind of become a day trader that's just swapping stocks, you know, but those stocks are human beings. This one's not giving me what I want. I'll take this person. They're not giving me what I want. I need to go shop for another person. And people just become disposable. I think that love, part of the equation is not a return on investment. And I love your terminology because, and I think I've used that because it's not a business transaction. If you listeners, if you think that love is Burger King, come here and have it your way, well, that's a business transaction. Right. Love is so much greater than that. If you want a word, I think, and Kim, you can weigh in on this. I'd love to hear your take on it. If you want one word that best describes love, it is sacrifice.
Yeah. Interesting word, that sacrifice.
And it's sacrifice without, you know, hey, what have you done for me lately? I find people start to run that up the flagpole. Oh, well, Doc Keith, I've sacrificed. Now, when are they going to sacrifice? But see, when you do that, you short circuit the whole process. I mean, Immanuel Kant, I think, comes into play here. And gosh, where's my little Kant finger puppet? Can't touch this. Dun, 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 dun. Can't touch this. When I need one, he's in the drawer there. We meant to get him out. He's got a little magnet we attach into our mic stands, but we'll get him out next time. But Immanuel Kant, the categorical imperative. If that is so correct, Kant would say you should be able to apply it to every relationship, and it is still valid. But as Kim pointed out, you cannot apply the ROI to taking care of a baby. And I know there's an argument there, but really they're just a lot of poop, pee, and burping. And you just can't apply it to that. It's sacrifice. I mean, I remember that fondly with my son, who's, I'm sure, ashamed to know or maybe advertising that he once was a small child that pooped and peed and burped a lot. But that's some of my fondest memories. Just, he's a med student now. Imagine that. But that there's, you know, what's the return on investment? You know, it was all a lot of sleepless nights and you know, some hassle that are just golden moments for me. Is that my return on investment? No, I think that's a side effect. That's a side effect of giving of myself. And if you want to survive and thrive, as we started out the conversation today, giving of yourself without expectation of a return on that investment is what is going to be necessary. When you find yourself asking, yeah, but what do I get out of it? then it's no longer love. It's just a business transaction.
Right. I think another term for that too is unconditional. Mm-hmm. We don't put conditions on it. It's not I'll love you until. Right. It's I love you regardless.
You know, it's so funny. It's so funny to hear you say that. When I was married, I got married when I was 18 years old. I was going to be the first woman president. Somehow things changed. I met this man, fell in love, and that
was it.
Hey,
they're still looking. There's still a chance.
Yes. Well, and I'm younger. I'm younger than the current president, so I have time at that time. But I got to a point where I had kids, and I felt like I was doing everything. I was the one that was doing all the laundry, all the house cleaning, making dinner every night, changing every diaper. To me, my husband just became a paycheck. That's all he was. And I thought, well, why do I have this guy around? Because it's one more person to cook for, one more person to take care of. Is it really worth it? Do I really want this guy around? But then I thought, you know what? I want a great marriage. I want to be happy in my marriage. And so I decided I was going to do everything I could to make him happy. Whatever it was, I was going to make him happy. I didn't put a time limit on it. And I didn't say, I'm going to do this for 6 weeks. And if he doesn't give back to me, then I'm out of here. I didn't do that. I just decided that I was going to make him happy. So I would go to the grocery store and bring home his favorite treat. I would make his favorite dinners. I would write a little note before he went to work. Anything I could do to make this man happy, I did. And our marriage drastically changed. It changed because love's contagious, first of all. You give it, you're going to get it. Maybe not from everybody, maybe from everybody, but that's the way love works. Love is this beautiful thing. You're not giving it to get it, but you do. It just happens. But really, it changed my heart more than anything. It changed my heart toward my husband. And the way I looked at him and the love that I had for him just grew. And our marriage was fabulous after that. And I loved doing things for him. I loved it. One of the words is love is kind. Love is kind, which, man, that month, that was a tough month in Haiti. I got to tell you, it's quite a story. What happened for me to find love being what the truth of love is kind is. But Dr. Heath, that's exactly what you're talking about. It is being kind, doing kind things, saying kind things, acting in a kind way with zero expectation of getting anything in return. And how often do we hear people say, oh my word, they didn't even say thank you. Or I brought them a casserole when they were sick, you know, where are they with mine? You know, whatever. But as soon as you do something to get something in return, we go back to that transaction.
That's right. And do I believe that we should say thank you? Yes, please. Thank you. Oh, I so appreciate that. Yes, we should do that. But another quote comes to mind, this time from one of my favorite movies, when Jim Gordon says to Batman, played by Christian Bale, I never got to say a thank you. And Batman says, and you'll never have to. And I think that's the best way in relationships is instead of stick around, ask. The question is not, is someone going to thank me? The question is this the right thing to do? And how do you know if it's the right thing to do? I have a suggestion, but it comes with a question. Have you ever gone to, well, Walmart? For those of you who don't have a Walmart, it's this big store, and they don't sell walls. I thought when I was a kid they sold walls. I thought, crap, who sells walls? But they sell everything else, the stuff to go on your walls. Have you ever gone to Walmart and just shoplifted? I mean, it's cheaper. I mean, they got cameras, but if you're really sneaky, maybe you can get away with it. Well, I've asked, I don't know, goodness, if I said hundreds, I'd be shooting low patients this very question, and they look at me in shock saying, I'm not a thief. Well, there you go. You don't steal because you've decided in advance you're not a thief. Okay. When you go to Walmart, you don't have to wonder, or any other retail store, am I going to steal something today? Is this the day I'm going to a little five-finger discount, save me some money? No, it never enters your mind because you've already decided who you are. What I'm recommending is that as a person in a relationship, all you have to decide is who you are. which means you've decided your character. And once you decide your character, you simply live up to that character. You're not making it dependent on the other person. You're doing it because this is who you are. I do what I do in my family, not because of anything I get. Actually, I do things in my family in spite of what I get or don't get. You know, maybe some argument and, that's a stupid rule, Dad, and all that kind of stuff. No, my son's very respectful, but I do set rules. And, of course, he's 22 now, so he has his own rules. But I do what I do not based on what's out there. This gets back to internal locus of control, but because of who I've decided to be. It's 98.8% the equation in life that once you decide who you are, and you it just makes life a lot easier. You know, you've already answered those questions. You don't have to get in a situation to decide if you're going to steal or do something unethical or do something that might harm your family. You've already decided who you are. I mean, I've already decided, well, I'm a health nut, if you didn't know, by the turmeric and the black maca and the black pepper extract infused latte, that there could be a case of honey buns that somebody drops off in my house. Am I going to eat it? No. Why? Because I hate honey buns? No. I love honey buns. But I'm not, because I've decided otherwise. Decide who you are first, and then everything else takes care of everything else. Before we run out of time, we got, you know, less than 10 minutes to go. You know, I think we're running toward the end of the show. What are the questions might you guys have for Kim about surviving and thriving? What are some of the hurdles that you see people? What are some of the things that sabotage people in your work with people, helping them learn how to survive and thrive? What gets in the way?
Blame.
Oh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think blame is a big one. And it's easy to do, or it can be so easy to do, because you don't want to take personal responsibility. And so something happens and life isn't going the way you want it to. It must be somebody else's fault. And that certainly gets in the way, and not in a healthy way.
It's the politician's favorite refrain. Mistakes were made, but not by me.
Right. Right.
We live in a whole age where to be a leader, it seems, you must also be an expert at denying and shirking responsibility. Quite different from the politicians of old, whence comes the term, the buck stops here. And listeners, we're talking about a buck knife, which was actually used in a poker game. And it was passed around the table. And the one that dealt the cards was the one that had the buck knife. Literally, the buck stops here. I'm the one that deals the cards. And we need a whole revival of people that just take responsibility. Yeah, that was my fault. Mm-hmm. I erred. I'm going to fix it. Right. But you don't. Nothing's my fault. My behavior's not my fault because I have a diagnosis. My behavior's not my fault because you're gaslighting me. My behavior's not my fault because you're manipulating me. You're controlling me. My behavior's not my fault because you're tricking me. Well, a little case study, check that out. Google Patty Hearst. Huh. Patty Hearst tried that in her court defense. She still went to jail. You know why? Because in a forensic setting, that is all so much, and what's my clinical term here? Kool-Aid drinking, pseudo-psychological, claptrap nonsense. It doesn't work.
Great term.
Say that 5 times real fast. And I do say that many times very fast on social media, because a lot of people these days are living their lives by social media. They what do they see? They see people's, it's everybody else's fault. It is simply a victim-based mentality. And if you want to decide to be a victim, you know what? Here at the Art Lab, we have a recommendation for you, and we will support this all the way. You have a right to be as miserable as you choose to be. Knock yourself out. But Kim is here giving us a surreal experience, with, it doesn't have to be that way, you know. Kim, I think your life could have gone many ways, and I'm so impressed by the direction it did go. Can you believe where you are now as a person?
I'll tell you, I love my life. I love getting up every morning and doing the things that I do. I love talking to people. I love meeting new people. I love people in general. I love people, and I love black licorice for some reason. Most people don't.
Oh, me too. But
you know what? I meant to mention that. You know, you listeners that are still with us, I almost shouldn't share this, but I mean, but again, you guys have the right to think. I had a bad experience with black licorice as a kid. And I don't like black licorice because I had a bad experience with it. I don't know. Is it too much? Should I share the experience?
I
was a kid,
it.
And I loved candy, and we were poor, and we didn't have much, you know, money to buy food, groceries, much less candy. And I think I might have been, I still remember this. It's so formative. I think I was maybe 4 years old, and I'd seen pictures of black licorice and just candy in general. And I found a piece on the floor. And, you know, as a kid, kids eat stuff off the floor. And I ate this black licorice. But this black licorice, it seemed to be very gritty, and it had hair in it.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And as it turns out, it belonged to my cat Igor. It was not licorice at all. And my brain over-assimilates now. You listeners can look that up. Over-assimilation, psychological phenomenon. Assimilation good, over-assimilation bad. And every time I hear about black licorice, that's where my brain goes to. I over-assimilate to my pet cat Igor's homemade black licorice.
You scared me for a second when you said you viewers can look that up. I'm glad you said over-assimilation.
Over-assimilation. Well, you can also look up the product of a cat. It's not licorice, by the way. But it does, it favors, you know, it's similar.
No.
But I'm glad there's a lot of black licorice. I don't want to get sued by the black licorice people. I'm not putting down black licorice. I think it's a wonderful thing. I like red licorice, you know, because
it's... Yeah, red's good, too. You know, when you started that story, I thought, I've never seen a piece of attack licorice. So to have a bad experience with black licorice, I wondered what that was going to look like. Mm-hmm. And then come to find out, it really wasn't an experience with black licorice at all.
That's right. I also had a bad experience with a banana, but I'll save that for another episode.
Oh,
gosh.
Oh my goodness. You and cats.
No, I was going to say, now we know why you don't have a cat.
See, it's all the trauma. It's all the trauma that's coming out right here at the end of the show. Okay. Well, all right. You know what? Kim, you have been so wonderful. Yes. It has been such a pleasure to have you. We hope you come back sometime. You're just a bright and shining light out there in the world that heavily, heavily, so desperately needs it. And so we really appreciate your work. How can folks get more of your material? Where can they find more of what you have to offer to the world?
Well, my last name has way too many letters. I'm literally the only Kim Sorrell spelled my way in the entire world, because there's two R's, two E's, two L's, S-O-R-R-E-L-L-E. But kimsorrell.com is my website. You can also get there by typing in loveis.info. I do have a 14-day love challenge on there. And if you sign up for it, I will send you for free a WWLD, What Would Love Do, wristband. Because if you can answer life's questions that way, what would love do, you're going to be headed in the right direction.
That is so fantastic.
Wow. Yeah. And of course, I'm all over social media, grabbing my book right now. So you can just see the cover.
Hey, and she's holding a book called Love Is, and we will have a graphic of that and a link for that in the show notes that you can just navigate down to. Easy peasy.
And I'll tell you, I've done the homework for you. You don't have to go to Haiti for a year to figure out what love is. Because I did it. So if you want to know more about love, it's really interesting, the things that I found out about love.
It's something that human beings have been trying to figure out for many millennia, and we really appreciate you helping us with that. That is so fantastic. And I want to challenge audience members, listeners today, get out there, get activated, get busy. The psychology of surviving and thriving is in motion, motion, motion. It's not getting what you want. It's presenting yourself and offering yourself in a sacrificial way up to service. Find something bigger to serve, and the rest will take care of the rest. Join us next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab, where we study and work at helping you engineer accurate, realistic thinking and life-affirming beliefs in your life. Share the show out, and we look forward to having you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome to another great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab. And our scary special guest today is a killer's worst nightmare, because he gets inside their mind, shining a light on how they think, how they operate, and how they stalk their prey. I hope you're not their prey. His weapon, a keyboard. Join us in the Art Lab today as we dive into the darkness during this episode of Killer Stories, the Psychology of Psychopathy.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, endorsed, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP for short. Warning. Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead, don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.